connect, what will they know, Brian? Now that it's live.
We're live on Alpha Geek Radio.
What? What?
That's our shameful secret.
Look, I think it's a hit piece. I think that...
You mean it's a very successful...
I think Alpha Geek Media is out to get me, and I'm going to sue them for streaming me live when I press a button that streams me live.
Yeah.
I like secrets.
I'm so glad. I don't want to get political, but.
But I'm going to anyway.
Allow me to get a little political. No, it's like, number one, totally called it. Number two, now that we're here, we all know who the next president is going to be, and more importantly, who it's not going to be. You could still do something really good by opening up the floor to more
people. I see what you're saying.
5%. 5% gets
you on. You're on about your fifth party voting.
Vote for Jill Stein, vote for Gary Johnson, I don't care which.
Rosie O'Donnell.
Let's get them both over 5%, so they have to be included on the ballot for all of them.
Brian Brushwood approves this message.
That's right. You're damned right.
Damn straight. I believe I will write in Roger.
I told you about the
That's
guy.
That's a really good idea. Why is that not a good idea?
I told you about the guy in California who has given away his vote before, right?
Oh, yeah. No, you were telling me about that. I can't remember if that was live on the Cord Killer stream or if we were just talking. But yeah.
I think it might have been in the Hangout.
Was that in the Skype thing that we did for the patrons?
I don't know.
Yeah, but that's crazy. Like, well, it's not crazy, but it's interesting.
It's a clever thing to do because like the question is
you were saying that I don't remember if it was recorded or not because I remember Allison Sheridan being like, wait a minute, you could do that?
Yeah. It's interesting because it raises the question of, is a vote your property?
See, anytime you try to get political, you just get shouted down, Brian.
By the babies?
By baby.
A bunch of babies. Bunch of babies. All these crybabies.
Lynn in the chat room. Don't get politics in my tech, shakes her cane. You got politics in my tech. You got tech in my politics. Ooh, somebody's taken that name, Polytech, right?
Polytech has to be taken.
That's too obvious. Polytech on YouTube. Yeah, it's a channel. Google wants to know my location. No, you can't. Except to send my wife's checks. But other than that, politically challenged, George Mason University. Official statement, response to video critics. Oh, politically challenged Texas Tech Edition. Interesting.
What?
Doesn't seem to be about technology so much.
So they're doing it wrong?
I think it might just be a Texas Tech thing, and that's why it's Polytech. Could be wrong. We're going to save batteries today, though. That's what I'm excited about. None of your batteries will catch on fire ever again. Lynn says, hashtag baby 2016. I'm with baby. That baby makes sense. Vote baby.
Hmm. You know, I'd hate to do this, but I think I have to reboot the router here in the room.
Oh.
So I think you lose me for a bit.
Oh, okay. No problem.
Is that all right?
Yeah, you got 4 minutes.
Okay, all right. Oh, wait, never mind.
Everything good?
Seems to be. Let me check.
I want you to start calling it a router.
A router?
Reboot the router.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna have to reboot the boot.
Boot.
Disconnect.
This baby approves this message.
All right. Yep. No, I have to reboot the router. Reboot the router.
Okay. Brian Brushwood will be back after rebooting his router. Call Roto Router, that's the name, and away go slow bandwidth down the drain. Reroute the booter. So, folks on audio, I'm going to give you a live play-by-play of Brian's empty chair.
It's an empty chair.
It's an empty chair. Just now we can see the barest outline of the metal bracket that makes up the top. This is a backless chair that we're looking at. Now, well, now Brian's sitting in it. I can't see it anymore.
I'm back.
And this time it's personal. All right, I'm going to start our video then, if you're back.
Roger. Chang.
Yes. Oh, you weren't asking for me.
That joke never gets old.
Never.
It'll never go to college. We are going to talk about batteries today.
Batteries.
You're going to like it. Don't think otherwise.
I hope so.
Yeah, actually... Unfortunately, I thought when we first brought this topic up that we might be able to save batteries, but now the more research I did, the less confident I got about that. But I still have some hope.
That was really weird. It just kicked me out of the conversation, put me in a room by myself, and then brought me back.
Oh, because you reboot the router?
Because I reboot the root.
Now we got two Brians, but one of them is steady Brian.
Well, I mean, he's doing a magic trick in which he spins a spinning card in front of him.
He's really concentrating.
So I finished that futuristic violence and fancy suits.
Yeah. So I did end up putting it up for vote on Sword and Laser. It is the modern pick. I put up a modern and a classic pick because the other thing I was thinking of reading was Slan by A.E. Van Vogt, which won the retro Hugo Award that was awarded this year.
They do a retro Hugo?
Yeah, they've been going back and awarding Hugos to books that were out in years before they were awarding Hugos.
Oh, wow! That's an ambitious angle.
Yeah, and so they do a different year every year.
Yeah. Do I have 90 seconds to grab a soda and come back?
Yeah, you got like 34.
Okay, done.
But I think you could do it. You should have thought of that before we left the house, Brian. Yes. So we're going to talk a little bit about Samsung, but not a ton. We're going to talk about battery tech and the hope for the future. We're going to talk about AirPlay and Facebook Live, and Periscope, and the Twitters. And all of that sort of thing. We are briefly even going to mention that Verizon...
34 seconds.
Oh, man, you're like cutting it close now. You ready?
Yep.
All right. Well, let's do it. Here we go. Daily Tech News Show is powered by its audience, not outside organizations. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, October 13th, 2016. I'm Tom Merritt. Joining me today, in place of the vacationing Justin Robert Young, who's enjoying the cheap pound, Mr. Brian Brushwood, host of Night Attack, Cord Killers, Weird Things, and more. Welcome to the show, Brian.
It's a contractual arrangement that I am bound to sub in for my pair bonded. Like, if I were to die, he has to marry Bonnie and raise my kids.
Ah, so that's a rule. That's a biblical law.
Correct.
Well, that's amazing that we get to take advantage of that. It's good to have you on the show. If people who are not patrons may not know, we put out our first special edition experimental discussion show for people at the $10 level and above. And Brian joined in on that with Allison Sheridan and Roger Chang and Scott Johnson earlier this week. So we're getting a lot of Brian Brushwood out of you.
Yeah, no, some might say too much, Brian.
Nah, I wouldn't. I would say to those people, you don't know enough, Brian Brushwood. We're going to talk about battery tech because you had an interesting thought about hydrogen fuel cells. So we dug into that a little bit. That was prompted by us saying, isn't there anything better than a lithium ion battery that could like start smoking and overheating and catching on fire?
So we came up with something even more explosive.
Yeah, the humanity of hydrogen fuel cells. We'll talk about that in a little bit. First of all, though, a couple of bits. Hyperloop One, that's the one in LA, not the one in Nevada, just got $50 million from the DP World Group of Dubai and is planning a full-scale test in Q1 2017, keeping you up to date on that. And in the ongoing saga of Verizon might buy Yahoo, Verizon General Counsel Craig Silliman. Brian, that's his name.
Wait, for reals? Pinky promise?
S-I-L-L-I-M-A-N.
Oh, man.
I knew you'd love that.
This seems wacky.
Verizon General Counsel Craig Silliman told reporters that the recent data breach revealed by Yahoo could reasonably be called an adverse material impact that would allow Verizon to pull out of the deal to acquire Yahoo. Now, Verizon didn't say they're going to do that. They said, we have reason to, if we want, we're evaluating what that impact is, and we will make our decision soon. So there you go. Verizon starting to make tiny noises. Previously, they'd said, no, we're not going to pull out. Now they're starting to make, well, we could. We could pull out. We'll see if they do. Here's the rest of the top stories. Samsung is offering U.S. Note 7 customers an added credit when they return their defective phones. They were already giving you a $25 bill credit when you returned a device. That was supposed to kind of make up for your pain and suffering and any accessories you might have bought. Now, the company is saying if you exchange your Note 7 for a Samsung device, they'll give you a $100 credit. Both credits are in addition to refunding the purchase price of your Note 7. South Korean customers are also being offered a similar financial incentive.
Man, that's huge. I can't remember a tech story like this that had so big an impact. I mean, this is they're in free fall right now, right?
The phone division certainly is. And they're making a lot of effort to tell people, like they sent a notice to people with Samsung Galaxy S7s saying, your 7 numbered phone is fine. Do not worry. That's not the one that needs to be returned, because, you know, people hear Samsung Galaxy, and this is the danger of that kind of branding. Samsung Galaxy 7. Which one? Note S? I don't know. They all run together to me.
Yeah, no. All I know is that 7 is a haunted number and that you must not ever accept it.
So, I mean, $100 credit. So basically they're saying you could swap in your phone or you can get a refund. If you swap in your phone, we'll give you a $25 credit. If you get a Samsung phone when you swap it in, we'll give you a $100 credit. And that's an attempt to make people stay with Samsung and staunch that bleeding. Google Photos added some new features. Photos could previously turn live photos from iOS into GIFs, and it can now do the same for segments of your videos. The Google Photos app uses some machine learning to identify activity anywhere from big movements that you might expect all the way to just like a little smile. It then creates a GIF that you can share. Another new feature shows your older pictures of people who appear in recent photos with the caption, "Rediscover your memories." I got one from Rediscover 5 years ago. Another card will show you the best photos from the last month if you'd like that. And finally, the assistant will now recommend tweaks to any pictures that aren't properly rotated. They'll say, hey, this one looks like it's 180 degrees. Would you like to rotate it 90 degrees and get it upright? Stuff like that.
Weirdly, that little rotate to the right orientation thing, for whatever reason, my iPhone, like our usual jam is like twice a year, we'll gather up everybody's iPhones, I'll plug them in and we'll download all the pictures to, we have a Synology disk station, which it has two disk failure array on there, but I worry about the house burning down or whatever. So I've been wanting an offsite thing, but weirdly, when it draws in these things, for some reason they go sideways on the Windows PC versus the iPhone. I think that little tiny thing just made me just up and decide, you know, what is it? $100 a year? Fine. Yeah. Let's just do that and back up our family memories to the cloud.
Yeah. You don't even have to pay for Google Photos up to a certain point.
Yeah. I was about to, I mean, we're almost certainly.
So you're basically, you're saying like, I'm going to have to pay. I
mean, yeah. No. I mean, we got a lot of photos now. Gotcha. That the kids are taking photos, there's a lot of photos.
Yeah. And Google Photos is generally praised by folks. I use it. I have photos in there. I don't rely on it to organize my photos. I'm really horrible when it comes to photos. It's something that I don't pay enough attention to.
That's another thing I like about this. By using machine learning, it's going to sort and know the difference between a good picture and a bad picture. And it's going to say, like, I don't see a face in here, so I'm going to assume this is not a very interesting photo, and everything's blurry and out of focus. That's exactly what I need, because at this point, it's I'm thrilled that for we started taking digital photos in 1998 with a the Kodak 1 megapixel camera, and so we've been good about keeping everything, but it's unmanageable. I can't go through it, and I need an adult robot to walk me through my own photos.
Well, there you go. Thursday, Periscope announced something called Periscope Producer that lets broadcasters stream any video to Periscope, not just the video from your phone's camera. So if you've got a switcher or you use Wirecast or OBS or something like that, you can plug that in now and stream to Periscope. Louis Vuitton was a beta partner, and they used that system to stream a fashion show from Paris earlier this month. Producer is meant for organizations, not individuals, so you have to be approved by Periscope by answering a few questions. If you want to apply, head to t.co/Periscope Producer. We are both people who stream things on the internet and supposedly could be considered organizations, I guess, Brian. Is this of interest to you?
Maybe I've already had Bryce reach out and apply. because the thing is that there's a sizable fan base on Twitter, because I'm very, very friendly on Twitter. But this would be a way, you know, oftentimes I say, hey, we're doing Cord Killers now, check it out. And I'll get like one or two people to do it. But then every time I Periscope, it's like magnetism. There's something about Periscope that just is, because it's inside the ecosystem, people are willing to jump on over. And I think that would be great for Weird Things, Cord Killers, and Night Attack. So hopefully, I'm assuming you're okay with this as my Cord Killer. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's funny, like history tends to repeat itself. I remember back in the days of Buzz Out Loud, we were like, should we stream on Stickam or Ustream or both? And I was always for streaming as many places as possible. Then that kind of stuff went away, or it got harder to use or less popular. People weren't paying attention to it. And now it came back, but it came back on the phone. And so it was like, well, I could use Facebook Live, but I have to use it on my phone unless I get one of these special relationships where Facebook pays you to stream to them. And then they started to loosen that up. Periscope just didn't have a way to do this until now. Now they've started to loosen that up, and we're starting to get what went away when Ustream became more enterprise and Justin TV closed down and Twitch became exclusively gaming for a while, starting to loosen up like, oh, I guess people do like to broadcast live. Oh, I guess organizations do like to broadcast live. Well, let's make that available. So now we're back to this let's stream to as many places as possible situation.
You are 100% on target there. That's exactly, because I remember in the early days of Justin TV using the app when the app came out, and I remember recording like 6 hour long car rides with Chad Johnson. We'd just turn it on and just goof around for whoever was in the chat.
Yeah. So maybe this time some of these companies will stick around and we'll be able to rely.
I mean, hopefully Twitter's not going anywhere now that they bought Periscope, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the other question, right? Twitter is not in a great position. It's not about to go out of business, but it's trying. Part of it is trying to sell itself, and another part doesn't. That's the Jack Dorsey part. And if they don't sell themselves, they could be in danger of becoming a Yahoo in a couple of years, and that could be bad for Periscope. Meanwhile, Facebook has added support for Apple's AirPlay and Google's Cast function. If you're one of the people who likes to watch these videos, when watching a video in your Facebook app, you tap the TV button in the top right and select the device you want to stream to. And then, because that's the way Cast works and also the way you can make AirPlay work, you can continue to browse Facebook while that video plays on your TV. So Facebook becomes your second screen. Function is live in the iOS app and it's coming to Android soon. YouTube and Periscope both have similar functions already as far as casting goes. But Facebook Live was playing a little catch up here. Do you don't really use a television, do you, Brian?
No, that's why I was noticeably silent there. It's like my brain is just like, literally, you got anything to say about this brushwood? And I'm like, nope.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. And I'm not saying you're unusual, but the common perception is like, oh, people watch things on TV and they'd like to watch the things on your phone on TV. And I think that's true for a lot of people, but there's also a lot of people that don't care about this. So it may be an essential function, but especially with things like live where the fidelity, I mean, we just talked about how the fidelity can go up because you can have broadcast partners. So I guess that gives the lie to what I'm about to say, but the fidelity usually isn't something that requires a large screen.
Yeah, and you know, I'm tempted to say like, oh, well, I bet for the kids they'd really like that because they don't have to watch on a tiny phone. But that's not even true, because I walk in on my kids all the time ignoring the Netflix playing on the family room television while they all watch Amazon Prime on their phones or whatever. It's like, It doesn't seem like the younger generation really gives a darn about, you know, big screen versus little screen.
Man, it's not just the younger generation either. I laugh sometimes because, first of all, when Eileen's watching television, she always has the phone out. And I swear, she swears it's not true, but I'm like, you never look at that. Do you know what's actually happening on the television screen? Because you're always looking at your phone. She's like, no, I watch both. But then the best part is when she'll start watching a video on her phone while watching television.
I catch myself doing something similar. I'll have an audiobook going or a podcast, and then I'll find myself reading an article. Like you could play a video game or Hearthstone or something, but then you see an article and all of a sudden you're like, why am I trying to read an article while listening to a show?
Yeah. Some people can do it. I am not one of those people. Meanwhile, Twitter is testing out replacing the Moments tab in its iOS and Android apps with a feature called Explore. So we've gone from Discover to Moments to Explore. In fact, Moments isn't even done rolling out. The Explore tab combines Moments, which is that, like, here are a collection of tweets around a thing that's happening, or if they do, like, NFL Live or the upcoming Victoria race in Australia that they just got, those will show up in Moments. So all that stuff stays in the Explore tab, but they also add in things like trending topics and search. So Moments isn't even finished rolling out globally, and they're already playing around with changing what shows up there because Twitter, that was a Freudian slip, Twitter continues to focus on live events and live commentary. That's where they think their future is.
I don't know that their impulse is wrong either, because oftentimes, like, weirdly, the problem with Twitter is that we all stay in our own bubble. We watch what our friends are saying, and then we speak to our own tribe, and that becomes very, sequestered. But meanwhile, I'll find out what Twitter is abuzz over, not from Twitter. It's always from, like, CNN. I'll be working out, and CNN is like, oh, all of Twitter's going nuts over this. And I was like, oh, well, thank you, old-fashioned news media, for telling me that, because apparently Twitter's not very good about telling me, or at least not in an easy way with the apps I use.
Yeah, and I don't know that Explore will necessarily help with this, although search trending topics being there easier might. A lot of times, especially recently, where events are moving fast in our political situation here in the United States, in case you hadn't been following, I'll start seeing people reacting, right? And they'll be saying things about something, but I don't know what that something is yet. And there's not an easy way to go, okay, but what happened that you're saying that about?
Yeah, absolutely. And I wish that there was something. And part of the problem, of course, is that everybody's using different apps. So it's difficult to unify everything to where everybody opening up Twitter always, you know, they all see the same message at the same time.
Yeah. And definitely you want a better place than Moments to house your Thursday night football streams. They're going to do election coverage now in partnership with BuzzFeed on election night. So they'll have live coverage of the election from BuzzFeed there. That Australia's Victoria Racing Club broadcast that I mentioned earlier, the Emirates Melbourne Cup is on November 1st. Apparently that's huge in Australia, and a big get for them in global sports. Peter Wells told me the race is so big, the entire state of Victoria takes a public holiday for that race.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's amazing.
So Twitter is becoming, I mean, I think they have, and I think this is why Jack Dorsey doesn't want to sell. I think they have a shot at becoming that place that you tune to. They're not that yet for most people. They are still the place where a lot of people react, and then those reactions are mentioned by others, like you say, on CNN. But they have a chance of flipping that coin to be the place everyone goes, oh, something's happening. I'm going to tune into Twitter and watch the live video and see those reactions all at the same time.
Yeah, there's something really precious about Twitter's brevity and the fact that it's, you know, in what, 2006 or whatever. Is that when they started? But basically, humanity chat room and started keeping a diary from that point forward. We won't have to wonder what did people think during this significant event, because we'll have literally everything anyone had to say about it.
All the data mining. Finally, a Russian nanoscientist named Dr. Igor Ashurbeli, founder of the Aerospace International Research Center. He's involved in UNESCO. He received an award for his work in nanotechnology from UNESCO. Announced plans Wednesday. And I hasten to add before I tell you what he announced, in case you hadn't heard, this is reported by the Financial Times. This is a real person. I looked him up on UNESCO. He did, like, this is not someone off in the wilderness or a crank or something that got picked up by people looking for clicks. He announced that he wants to create a nation in space called Asgardia. The goal is to open up access to space, foster world peace, possibly protect Earth from asteroids and other debris. The plan is to start the nation on a satellite to be launched in 2017. So it would have a location. It wouldn't necessarily have occupants yet, but there's a plan for that eventually. And if you're interested, you can crowdfund the project and even register for Asgardian citizenship at asgardia.space. That's A-S-G-A-R-D, just like the Norse mythology, Asgardia.
I think this is rad. I love amazing. All country building schemes. I love Sealand and all that stuff. It occurs to me that they have an advantage with this one in that they're physically sending an object outside of the jurisdiction of humanity. On the Weird Things podcast, we were talking about like what are the inherent values of going to Mars? And yes, you can mine resources and all that stuff. But to me, it seems like if you wanted to keep something a secret, you could keep it on Mars and nobody could subpoena that evidence, whatever it is. And we wouldn't be doing that with physical objects, but if you were a citizen of Asgardia, maybe your encrypted data or whatever could live there and it would be physically impossible to get a hold of. I don't know exactly what that would look like, but it seems like there is a tactical advantage of being in space.
Yeah, I mean, Sealand, if you don't know, is an oil rig platform that declared itself independent as a country and has flirted around with being an international data center where your data is protected in the same way. Like how much more remote can you get than Mars, or in this case, putting it out in outer space? Now you'd be covered by the Outer Space Treaty, perhaps. So there may be some things to consider there, but that's mostly about like not putting weapons in space and stuff like that. So as long as you don't do that, I don't think they can make you hand over data. The question is, can you really be a nation, though? Like, you have to be recognized by people. You certainly have to have a population, I think. And that's not something that would immediately be there. So I feel like this is more of a philosophical thought experiment that could turn into more, but is trying to make a statement by doing this.
Yeah, and as such, I think it's an effective way to do it. I mean, and it's not like a complete thought experiment where it's like, well, see that one rock up there? I'm declaring that I own that rock. It's like this is somebody's tangible, actual property being sent into space.
And you can register for citizenship, although please consult with your local government before doing so to find out what those implications are.
I'm going to become an Asgardian. Yeah. I'm going to get Asgardian dual citizenship.
Yeah, I mean, Texas and Asgardia, what more do you need? Hey, thanks to all those who participate in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. That's our top stories for today. But as I mentioned, Brian and I were talking about what our main discussion should be today. And the big story is still Samsung and the Note 7. That story, there's still some things to cover there about Samsung's business plans and is their brand done and what's the effect going to be. But Brian brought up an interesting thing, which was, what about the battery? I mean, at base, the problem that Samsung is facing is that lithium-ion batteries are difficult to manage. Now, I'm not excusing them when I say that. They obviously managed it poorly with the Note 7. But it is a challenge, and it is something that can, when engineered incorrectly, be a very big hazard. And yet we rely on lithium-ion batteries for almost everything. They are in many devices around your house. They're in electric cars, they're in laptops, they're in mobile phones, they're in batteries, they're in appliances, they're, you know, the industrial uses all over the place for generators. Isn't there a better way? So Brian, you were mentioning that hydrogen fuel cells are starting to get smaller and being used in smaller devices.
Yeah, well, and specifically the example that I thought of was, you know, if not lithium ion, then what? And you hear some kooky stuff where people are making like low grade radioactive drives that run on depleting uranium or whatever. But I think there's something to fuel cells because what made me think of was recently, I want to say, I don't know, a couple months ago, there was a drone that came out that ran, could fly for hours, or for like 2 to 3 hours, just on a single fuel cell. And because all you need to do is refill it with hydrogen, it could actually land itself at a recharging station, get puffed up, and then keep on going. So now we're in a place where a single drone could just fly literally all the way across America, carrying a package or whatever. And it seems like that should be coming to phones. or at least it could be, right?
Yeah, well, the same company that developed that drone hybrid battery that you're talking about, they showed that off in March 2016. They first announced it, I think, in 2015. It's called Intelligent Energy Holdings. They do a lot of publicity around hydrogen fuel cells, and they do some actual work with it, too. They have showed off prototypes for phones. They showed off a prototype of an iPhone 6 that had a hydrogen fuel cell in it in 2015. They also mentioned that they got 5.25 million pounds from an unnamed emerging smartphone maker to develop a cell that would be small enough for phones. They say that pretty much we just need to add vents because there's a small amount of water vapor that comes out of a hydrogen fuel cell, and then a way to refuel it. In the iPhone 6 that they did, they refueled it through the headphone jack. The rub that they don't really talk about as often is to refuel a hydrogen fuel cell, you need an external cartridge that supplies the hydrogen. And that seems to be the hangup. The same company actually sold a fuel cell charger called the Up for $230 that would allow you to recharge your phone using a hydrogen fuel cell. The thing was, you could charge a phone about five times before you needed to refuel it with hydrogen, and refueling cartridges cost you about $10.
Now, there's no reason that it has to stay that expensive because hydrogen, and Elon Musk is not a fan of fuel cells because he points out that hydrogen is just a storage medium, and it is, and that's fine. You know, we don't mine hydrogen. We have to make it, but if you're making it out of, you know, solar or wind, then that seems like a fine way to keep preserved energy. But in a world where, you know, CO2 cartridges are so cheap and ubiquitous and everywhere, why not make that the AA battery of the future, except for it runs your phone for an entire week?
Yeah, I think the hang up is figuring out this cartridge system, right? Because there's the recharging of your phone, and then there's the refueling of your phone. If you can make it so the cartridge is the battery and the battery is easy to refuel, like a headphone jack, right? Although apparently everybody wants to get rid of the headphone jack, so we might have to come out with a little, like, maybe a little fuel port. Like on a car where you can just, sure, you know, put in a thing. It can we make that so that that has to happen less often than plugging in my phone? Then, yeah, I might be in. Although it also has to be less costly. I charge my phone for cents on the dollar, right? Because I'm just using the electricity that comes into my house. Paying $10 every five charges seems pretty expensive.
Well, again, yes, of course, it's outrageous given today's prices, but that's because we lack the infrastructure. We don't have the economy of scale that comes. I mean, there's a reason that we keep sticking to lithium ion batteries. It's because we have a way to continue to make those. We have an easy way to plug them in and charge them. But that doesn't mean that it has to be that way always. It seems like, especially as we start to rely on more and more electronics, and I guess I'm thinking about the fringe kind of elements, like people who go backpacking or whatever, it's like the must-haves on you are getting increasingly must. And so as a result, the idea of paying $10 so that you know for sure you'll have power for your GPS and all that stuff for the duration of your 2 to 3 week long trip, that doesn't seem outrageous at all.
Yeah, and I think if you can get that price down, those use cases become more numerous. You start to get an economy that works for this sort of thing. So there could be a way forward there. It does seem that there's a lot of complexity to making that system work, and companies look at that complexity and say, I don't know, I think I'd rather come up with a form factor that fits what we have now. And so you see them looking at sodium ions or other forms of lithium ion that are safer. There were a couple of folks earlier this year who did some research that they were essentially making it so that the conductivity would break if the heat started to swell. So that there were little pieces of metal that would move away from each other if the lithium ion battery got hot. That would break the conductivity and potentially keep it from overheating. That seems to be patching the rowboat in a sense, whereas hydrogen fuel cells are attractive because this is an entirely different scenario and they are less prone to combustion.
Well, and think about it this way. We're reaching a point where the limiting factor on form factors is the size of the battery. How do we cram more battery in there? And I think that if we enter a hybrid phase, and this is pure speculation on my part, But just like we have hybrid vehicles like the Prius, why not have a hybrid phone where it's like it generally runs on lithium ion battery, a much smaller battery that lasts maybe 2 or 3 hours. And once it gets over, it's like, hey, you want to reduce? It's going to make a couple of clicks as it processes this hydrogen. You're like, yes, go ahead and enable. And you see some water vapor get excreted. And next thing you know, you have a full battery again. But it's kind of like a bit of a process. It seems like that's a good middle ground, whether that's an external device or something built into the phone. I don't know.
Yeah. And that's what Intelligent Energy Holdings has been playing around with. The drone that you were mentioning earlier was actually a hybrid. It had a little bit of a lithium ion battery in there to extend that life to 2 hours. And then the hydrogen cell was the stored energy that charged it up. So, and I think that's a positive and a negative, right? It helps us move along towards that implementation of hydrogen fuel cells, but it also doesn't get rid of that danger of the lithium ion battery. So, and I don't want to overestimate the danger of the lithium ion battery. It's 1 in 10 million that generally combust. And the Samsung Note 7 was 96 in a million just in the United States. So it was over-indexing the problem. But the reason they have problems is because it is so difficult to keep that charge under control. And it takes a lot of engineering to do that. It can be done, but if you make a mistake in that engineering, well, now you can see what happened. It happened to Sony in 2006.
I don't blame anyone for being worried about the safety of lithium ion as a long-term thing. But like you said, 1 in 10 million failure rate makes me feel pretty comfortable with what we got right now, this Note 7 story notwithstanding. To me, the interesting things about, you know, looking at fuel cells and so on is the idea of instant rechargeability, the idea of just walking up, like you're walking around, you take your phone, you just pop a headphone jack looking thing, and then 5 seconds later, like you've just inflated a bicycle tire, you have another full day's charge. Yeah. That sounds pretty rad to me.
And 7 day charge. I mean, you could be skeptical and say it'll never happen. That's fine. But if it weren't, wouldn't you, you'd want that, right? Because then you just don't have to think about it.
Well, what's funny is it's sort of like having Google Fiber. It's like, why do you need that much bandwidth? And just because you can't think of a reason you need that bandwidth right now doesn't mean the future won't come up with something to do with all that. Likewise, you can't imagine why you would need 7 days of charge on your phone, but that doesn't mean that 10 years from now, you're not going to feel like a sucker if you have to recharge your phone every day.
Yeah, it's that psychology of not having to worry about it. Instead of going, oh, my battery's starting to get low, I better charge soon, you just charge once a week and don't even,
and
you know,
I'll tell you what, it matters. You know, there's a reason I had the Apple Watch and I gave it up and went to the Pebbles to steal time, because it could go 7 days on a single charge. It's super easy. I love not thinking about it. I love being able to check it in the middle of the night. It's great.
Takes off that cognitive load. All right, let's get to our pick of the day. Chris in Toronto wrote in and said, I'll try to keep this short and sweet. All your audio listeners out there need to actually check out LenPeraltaStore.com. I was finally curious enough to see what Len draws on Fridays, and words cannot express how impressive his art really is. Now I just need to figure out which of the 125 prints I want. Also, side note, but to add to the ongoing Google Maps versus Waze debate, I am a devoted Google Maps user. I decided to give Waze another shot after my recent discussions. Routes and ETAs were pretty much the same, but the thing that spoiled Waze for me was the ads. So it's a double pick. One for Google Maps over Waze in my ongoing debate with Sakani Wright, who writes our Your Private Driver column at DailyTechNewsShow.com. And another really nicely, sweetly worded recommendation for Len Peralta from a listener, not from us. And if you didn't know, Len Peralta is putting together a special year-end DTNS poster for folks. It'll have faces of all the DTNS contributors on it, but the main face can be yours. You can order the poster with yourself drawn in, or if you don't want that, you can order a generic version. That one will feature one person drawn at random from all the people who order the poster, generic or otherwise, before December 31st. So head on over to LenPeraltaStore.com and take a look at that as well. He's got the outline. He's got like the ink drawing with the space left for your face right in there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you, Len. Thank you, Chris. Send your picks to us. Feedback at DailyTechNewsShow.com. And you can find more picks at DailyTechNewsShow.com/picks. A couple of emails before we get out of here. Andre is on a business trip in Bengaluru, or Bangalore, some people still say. The hotel he's staying at delivers an English language paper called The Hindu. And he notes the front two pages this morning were advertisements for the Huawei Honor 8. Andre notes, with the recent Note 7 disaster for Samsung, I wonder if Huawei is going to eat up their market share. It seems like a good competitor to the iPhone. Keep an eye out for more advertisements from Huawei in the U.S. And he's not kidding. He's not. And it's not an ad on the front page of the Hindu. It is the entire front page of the Hindu is a picture of the Honor 8.
I mean, more importantly, it's got an 8, not like that haunted number 7.
Right.
Cool number, Tom.
I mean, that's just happenstance for Huawei, but I'm definitely playing that up too if I'm Huawei, for sure. And finally, Adonis writes, "Hello, Tom and Cast. I am a Note 7 owner. So is my wife. Neither one of us wants to return our devices. I personally have had no issue. I've been on a plane with the first gen. I've had mine in a pool. I've plugged it in and used wireless fast charging. I play games that give it a workout, and I still have had no issues. Now, here's our concern. We've invested money on our device with accessories like cases, extra chargers, cables, screen protectors. Who's reimbursing us for that? What happens if we keep our Note 7? Is the device abandoned and will never get updated or supported? Is there a time frame to return it? I realize this S7 Edge and Note 5 are options, but the Note 5 had no expandable memory. Most everything I have is on my 256 gigabyte memory card, and the S7 had expandable memory, but I actually use the S Pen, and they don't have the S Pen. Also, I still have a Gear S. I even have a Note 10.1 device. See my dilemma? Suggestions?" I feel you, man. Adonis, my advice is going to be you can do what you want. You don't have to return it, but you are taking a risk. Just because you've worked it out and done a lot of things with it doesn't mean the thing that causes the battery to overheat isn't going to happen tomorrow, because we don't know what causes it. I would advise not taking that risk. I know you're going to miss the S Pen if you move to the S7, but it sounds like that's your best option until there is another Note. But you have to do what you think is right. Just keep in mind, you could be causing damage to property or those around you. It's a small risk, but it's a way bigger risk with the Note 7 than it is with your average phone.
I mean, just to be safe, though, maybe take a marker and take that 7. And if you sort of do an S thing, you can turn the 7 into an 8. So it's just not that.
You think that'll solve it? That it will.
Look, better safe than sorry, Tom.
Right.
I mean, take all the measures.
Yeah. Adonis, I totally get you. Like, especially even with the $100 credit, it's still not going to cover all those accessories. It sounds like you bought, but you should probably return it. It's risky. It's risky to keep. It's a risk that you can go in with your eyes open. But remember, this is 960 times more likely to overheat and catch on fire than the average lithium ion battery.
Okay. Well, all right. You realize, okay. Timeout. Let's have a quick lesson in statistics.
This is finally
what
this is
where I said, loosely translated, after your 1 in 10 million failure rate, that means, hey, man, your odds of a failure aren't 1 in 10 million. They're 1 in 1 million. So just, you know, be extra careful about that.
Yeah, it's exactly what I said. 960 times more.
Wait. Oh, wait. No, that's what, no, I guess my math is bad.
You're close. You're close enough.
1 in 10,000? No, wait. Is that right? 1,000 times more likely would
mean... Well, it's 96 out of a million.
1 in 10,000.
And that's the ones we know of so far.
So all right.
They've stopped selling them. We'll see when the rate hits the asymptote, too. I'd rather be safe than sorry. But also don't drive, because that's really dangerous, too.
Yeah.
The Holovect is back. You can get in on the early bird pricing. This is our friend Jaime, who is in charge of Holovect Industries, which is a real thing, which is super impressive. And it is a holographic desktop display. It displays things in 3D. So you've got to go check this out. Take a look at it. It is available at Kickstarter, and it's just look for HOLOVECT, the Holovect graphic vector display. 28 days to go in the Kickstarter. They just launched it yesterday, and they're already on their way. $9,322 of the $45,000 goal. And the key, Brian, is that the early bird pricing is still in effect.
Yeah, they got 9 of them left. The whole thing is going to be $1,200 for a Mark II volumetric display, but you can get it for $750. So it's almost half off. If you're an audio listener, what it looks like is basically the R2-D2 projection of Princess Leia. Now, obviously, except for picture vector graphics, right? The early days of video gaming, it actually projects onto an invisible cloud of water vapor. So there's a kind of an arena that it can project onto. You don't see the water vapor at all, but you instead see the reflection of lasers on it, and it actually translates pixels in all three dimensions. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and it doesn't do it on a screen. It does it in the air. You can pass your fingers through floating. The image. Yeah. So
it's a real thing. Definitely check it out.
Check it out. If nothing else, just to watch the video. He even made a DTNS logo that rotates that I tweeted out the other day. That's really cool. He did a sword and laser thing for us as well. So I think it's an amazing piece of machinery. And I just realized, if you put a hydrogen fuel cell in it that puts out water vapor, could that then?
Oh, wow. You're using the whole buffalo at that point.
Yeah.
Powering it and using the water vapor to project onto.
I don't know. Maybe he's probably thought of that. But anyway, check it out. Kickstarter.com. Look for Holovect, HOLOVECT. Thank you, Brian Brushwood, for joining us today. What else you got going on out there?
The only thing I've ever done, Tom, I've only ever done The Modern Rogue, a brand new series that has its own brand new, I think we turned a month old, its own YouTube channel. If you go to youtube.com/modernrogue and you can subscribe, that would be fantastic. Where me and Jason Murphy are continuing the spirit of hacking the system, only unfettered by little things like standards and practices and safety measures. And instead, we're shooting each other with pepper spray bullets and just a bunch of insane stuff.
Next episode is just you two holding Note 7s up to your and having a conversation.
We call it Russian roulette phone
calls. How long can we go? Check that out, folks. It's a good show. I enjoy it. You should enjoy it, too. Go and subscribe on YouTube. Where do they go again? What's YouTube channel?
YouTube.com/modernrogue. We have almost 30 episodes already up.
Thanks to everybody who supports this show, dailytechnewsshow.com/support. If you can't support us with dollars, leave us a review. If you don't have a buck a month to spare for the show, we understand. A 5-star review on iTunes or elsewhere goes a long way to helping new listeners discover the show. So just, you know, leave us that review and help other people find the show, and we'll all work together to make this happen. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. And our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. I will be out tomorrow, or will I? Scott Johnson will be hosting, Shannon Morse alongside, Len Peralta will be here, and I might show up depending on if my plane lands on time. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
We have a Schwoodgate going on in the chat room?
Yeah, somebody's posting as Schwood and said, by the way, I'm not Brian. And I'm like, how is he doing that? I thought that was a protected thing. Mm. Mm.
Schwoodgate, 95. Don't know why it's 95. Showbot.chatrealm.net is, of course, the place where we have titles like Assault on Batteries.
There's also Asgardian Space Pirates.
Yes.
An Asgardian Prince just sent me an email.
Asgardian Prince. Okay.
Batteries are hard, and I ain't lion.
Lion.
Asgardian
Leviosa. None of these are entertaining, Brian.
Let's see, battery of batteries. The musk have is hydrogen. Hydrogen wife. Hydro wife. Hydro kids.
Hydro wife. Hydro kids.
Holding out for Mr. Fusion.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
How to sell a better battery.
I need a hydro. I'm holding out for a hydro.
So the top one is Asgardian Space Pirates.
Sure. That's a classic.
You know, I've been wondering about the battery thing, and I'm wondering if they're just pulling too much current and they're just literally overheating the battery.
Like there's a failure in the software. I mean, it would be that could be a software thing.
It could be a design flaw. I mean, like the thing with batteries and the reason why Tesla was so quote unquote revolutionary with it is that you can't really pull a current beyond a certain limit from a single cell battery because it just gets too hot, mm-hmm. and catches fire, which is why Tesla went with a bunch of an array of batteries in their car. So I'm curious. I honestly think they actually know what the problem is, but if they revealed it, then there'd be big question marks over the rest of their line.
I don't think so. I think if they knew what the problem was, they would have fixed it the first time.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's a design, but I don't think it's.
I think they actually don't. Maybe it's obvious what it should be, and they don't want to admit it. But I think they know. I don't think they knew. Maybe they know by now. And it's questionable whether they'll release it or not. Do you have a favorite?
Let me look again. By look again, I mean pay attention this time. Showbot.tv. Showbot. I like Asgardian Space Pirates.
Asgardian Space Pirates is pretty good, I have to admit. As much as I admire the handicraft of assault on batteries.
Now, is that because the ions, they're salts?
Whoa, I didn't even think of that part. I was just thinking of assault and battery.
Oh, yeah,
and it being a play on that. Yeah. Asgardian Space Pirates. Beam battery.
Go see now. People are voting that up. So what happens if someone gets really mad at, like, Asgardian, just shoots at it?
I mean, well, that's the problem of being a that's why they need a bigger defense budget. They need
in Asgardia?
Base lasers, that's right. They're not big on defense.
Asgardian Leviosa. No, I'm going with Asgardian.
I took out your country. You no longer exist. Give me your data.
All right, guys. I got to record tomorrow.
All right, man. Thanks for hanging out. This is great. Good show.
Thank you, man. Awesome seeing you.
All right. Bye. Take care. And then there were two, Roger.
Three.
Well, and one that was asleep. That's true.
Two and a half people. Interesting if you actually could do that. Combine babies to form a single adult.
You mean their genetics or just?
No, just like take two kids and push them together.
That seems unethical.
Maybe. Was it unethical to separate Tuvok from who's the kitchen guy in Voyager? Neelix? No, was it Neelix? Right? Neelix? Remember they had Tuvix or whatever that.
Oh, right. When they had the transporter accident.
I kind of liked him. They should have kept him that way. Oh, yeah, jurisdiction. Let's see. It's recognized. Whoops.
Yeah. My levelating is done.
Keep your levelating to yourself, buddy. This is a respectable neighborhood.
This is a respectable institution. Establishment. This is a respectable establishment. Roger, pizza, do you think there'll be no levelating in here.
Oh, Tenser already left. I was about to ask him. It's like the Holovec. If I could like plug in like the old Vectrex game system into it.
Yep.
Because all their graphics were Vectrex.
You could. You'd have to use the API to translate things into 3D. But
get some volume.
Yeah. That's an interesting project.
It's all vector based. And it was made because they built those on the cheap because they found themselves with a huge warehouse full of those monitors and they were trying to find a way to get rid of them.
So, oh, yeah.
Like they just, I guess in a deal, whatever, they just ended up with it instead of the money and they're trying to figure out how to get rid of it since they're all for medical use. And obviously you're not going to find 100,000 people. We'll need oscillator monitors.
Asgardia. Any human living on Earth can become a citizen of Asgardia. Tap this button to register. Ooh, I just have to tap a button, Roger.
You should register. I would register.
You have to give your email.
No.
Your country. My country's Asgardia.
I wonder if you can claim refugee status.
A refugee from Asgardia. Well, you'd have to show that you're being... That you're fleeing the country for some reason.
But, like, where would you go? To their embassy? I mean...
Yeah, I don't know that they have that yet.
Sounds like you would be stuck in a very small space for the rest of your life.
All right, I'm applying. See what I get back. You'll receive soon additional information about your Asgardia citizenship.
Yes, the U.S. would still tax you because we're taxed based on citizenship.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, unless you renounce your citizenship, you have to pay taxes.
Yeah, but you know, really the biggest hassle is filing. It's just really complicated. But if you make, I think if you make less than 90,000, you don't owe anything.
You still have to file.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you live in a country, for example, if you live in Canada and you're still U.S. citizen, they have reciprocal tax laws. So if you pay taxes in Canada, that's deducted from quote unquote whatever you owe. So
oh really? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so more than likely you wouldn't owe anything. You just have to file.
You can deduct your Canadian taxes?
Well, so if you paid your Canadian your annual income tax.
Yeah.
And they have a list of things that are comparable to the US, you deduct those. Now there are some additional taxes that you might get taxed on in the US, for example, certain capital gains.
Okay.
On certain items that you would still have to pay. But if you know you don't have like a horse ranch or something, I think 95% of people would be okay. The only thing is that the IRS does not recognize Canadian retirement accounts.
Oh, they're not tax free. Yeah.
So you would be taxed on their amount.
Gotcha. But you're only taxed on the amount you put into them. You're not taxed every year on the total amount.
Yeah.
You're taxed on the appreciation, I guess.
Some basically whatever, not what you put in, but basically the interest.
Yeah. Yeah. The growth. It's a capital gains, right? Yeah. Yes. Well, then why didn't I move to Canada? Because I didn't have a job? Probably.
Probably. I thought about it, but CanCon rules would probably mean I wouldn't be working in any sort of entertainment or production.
Yeah. I wanted to move to Vancouver at one point because I just liked that city. And if it was in the United States, I would have done it. But because it's not, I was like, that sounds like a hassle. A lot of paperwork.
I remember when we got laid off, I was thinking about it. I was like, Canada, Australia. I was thinking Australia's industry isn't that big. So it's like, again, it would be work that I would be interested in doing and not just living there, so to speak.
Yeah. I just wanted to live there, but then it was, you know, everything after that becomes paperwork, hassle, job, all the realities.
Realities of life.
I could move to Seattle, which is close to Vancouver and similar in many respects in the ways of the things that I liked about Vancouver. But at that point, it became like, well, but it's not the same. And also, you, even though it's easier, you still got the whole same thing about jobs.
That's why I'm moving toward you, Tom.
Yeah, come on down. The land of flowing with milk and honey and smog.
Yes. Well, milk and honey for production-related work.
Is that milk and honey in the air? Yeah. Yeah.
You know what? It's a lot better than it was a decade ago.
It is. It's better than it was the first time I ever came here in 96.
It does have Ian, E-E-N, I don't know how to mispronounce it. It does have tons of TV production, but for producer work, generally it's a little harder to get into because typically you have what's considered below and above the line. Below the lines, a lot of the unionized trades like camera operators, grips, best boys and stuff like that. And those you would need to literally start at the beginning if you aren't part of that local union.
All right, BioCal just put a link to Point Roberts in the chat room, which is...
Oh, I know where Point Roberts is.
Do you know Point Roberts? That's a fascinating place.
But it's in
the state of Washington, but it's at the end of the peninsula that connects to Vancouver.
I know, strike it rich. It's a shame I don't know anyone in LA. Anyone?
Yeah, I'm technically in LA, I guess. I can't hide. What's the border like in Point Roberts? Like,
so it's surrounded by water on the south side. So
three sides. Three sides by water.
And then you have to drive north through Canada.
And there's one road, Tyler Drive, that crosses the border. Do they have a border point?
Yeah, there's a border crossing.
Is there like, but there can't be that many people in Point Roberts, right?
I think, isn't there a ferry too that takes you from there to
down to Washington?
Yeah. It might be expensive, but
yeah, it's not very developed either.
Well,
on the United States side. Like, people in Canada live right up to the border crossing.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, there's a good old fashioned border crossing there. That's hilarious. That seems like such a waste of money just for those few people that live there, but there it is.
It's ours, Tom, just because water surrounds it on three sides. It's ours.
Oh, BioCal even has the picture of the border crossing sign.
There's
13,000 people in Point Roberts? Wow, it doesn't look like there's that many houses there.
Maybe they're tower complexes.
I'm street viewing it complex. Right now, actually. That's a fascinating thing.
You know, 13,000 people isn't a lot, though.
It's not, but it's almost three times as big as the town I grew up in, so...
Well, I don't have your sense of...
No, but it looks like there's fewer buildings in Point Roberts than there were in Greenville. That's why I was like, what? You got 13,000 people in there?
Maybe they built them like hobbits in the ground.
Perhaps. Maybe they just all live in one house. It's a mansion.
Could be. It could be a compound.
The legendary mansion of Point Roberts. I'd heard of Point Roberts, but I really hadn't looked into it before. I'm glad BioCal put that in there.
372 families residing in the ZCTA. This is from another J. Martin in the chat room.
And I assume... Oh, 1,300, not 13,000. Okay, that makes a lot more sense. That looks like about 1,300. I was misreading Captain Jack's post earlier. I put a comma. I basically, I would have blown up the probe. So that's what would happen.
So NASA director, blah, blah, blah. What happened to the probe? Ask this gentleman right here.
1,314 people, 678 households, and 372 families. And I assume you can just move there, right? Like, there's no law in the United States that prevents you, unless it was like a gated community or something. But
yeah. I think really it just comes down to a lifestyle and how am I going to support myself issue. But, you know, back before September 11th, the border crossing between there, from what I understand, was pretty easy.
Yeah, I imagine it would be. I think, I wonder what the internet's like there, because we could just take the show to Point Roberts. I don't know why we do that, other than to be like, look, we're living in Point Roberts, isn't that crazy?
Isn't there that island off Seattle where they set up, the residents set up that kind of wireless internet system, and they ditched the local...
Oh, yeah, we talked about that, I remember.
That'd be cool. Actually, did the internet in Canada get better? Were Rogers and Telus and all that weren't trying to rake you over the hot coals?
I haven't heard as many complaints about it lately.
I wonder if you can get it.
From fourth grade on, Point Roberts children must take a 40-minute ride through British Columbia, crossing back into the United States in Blaine, Washington to go to school.
Interesting. Do they have to wear flak jackets and helmets? Do they drive?
Why?
It's a joke.
Why?
It's going through a foreign country. It's a joke.
Because Canada is so dangerous.
Have you seen moose charge at you?
I have. It's scary. I've actually been charged by deer in Japan too, so.
I have not been charged by deer. I've been charged by the hotel.
You're apparently a dad.
I know. Actually, the only animal that I can say I've been charged at have been goats, dogs, geese, and one llama.
Only one llama? I've been spit on by a llama. Actually, I've been charged by a llama.
They do a bunch of... It turns out, like, well, when I knew this llama, it turns out that a lot of people who just kept small flocks of sheep use them as guard dogs because they would blend in pretty easily. They wouldn't spook the sheep.
Daily Tech News.
And they weren't as noisy as dogs. But basically, but they were pretty aggressive toward anything that would threaten the herd or flock. Flock of sheep, right? You don't say herd of sheep.
Guard llama. All right, we got another one. Striker Rich put in Northwest Angle, Minnesota.
But I have to live in Minnesota.
Oh, that's really weird. It's part of Manitoba. And it's north of Ontario, but it's technically Minnesota because of a weird way that they drew the borders back then. So funny.
You know, I think it comes down to the fact that when they were surveying, they didn't have the most precise tools available. They just used a string of rope and whatever else they had available.
It's the only part of the continental United States outside of Alaska that is north of the 49th parallel. That's not just continental anywhere.
Except for Superman's Fortress of Solitude.
Is that part of the United States of America?
But he's an American citizen, right?
Shouldn't just because you're an American citizen doesn't mean your fortress built anywhere on Earth is...
Not just because he's an American citizen, because he's an American citizen and Superman.
All right.
No one's going to lift this giant key except maybe his cousin, the Green Lantern.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, please keep in search of more odd border towns, not just the U.S. ones, but they're all over the place. And we'll talk to you next time. Reminder, I won't be here tomorrow hosting the show, although I'm probably going to show up at the Hack 5 warehouse and photobomb Shannon.
Photobomb.
I'll see you tomorrow. Maybe.